GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm a scientist, author, and environmental entrepreneur. And I founded and serve as host of GreenSense Radio.
Well, Robert, it's all about water this week. I mean, a big subject, but some stuff right in our own backyard. Ingham County, Michigan, that's where Lansing, Michigan is. They're doing amazing things, replacing drainage pipes with plants, cleans up the ecosystem, adds beauty, and saves money. Chicago River, which is right in our backyard, they've recently installed some floating ecosystems, which helps the wildlife, helps clean up the pollution even more.
All coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Chef Maria Ibrahim, the fit foodie, joins us now on GreenSense to talk about summer grilling recipes. Welcome, Chef.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we talked last week about grilling a cornucopia of vegetables and meats, and now we're going to finish that off with dessert. Tell us what you've got in store for us.
I love the term cornucopia. And if people did not listen to that, they need to go back and listen because it really is.
And it was simple. And I tried it. It tastes great.
It's so fun. And you can season it however you like. And it's just really fun to make. But, you know, on the subject of grilling, people think, well, I'm just going to grill my meats and my veggies. Well, how about grilling your dessert? You can do that too. And stone fruit is in season. I'm talking peaches and nectarines especially, and these are great on the grill. So what you want to do is take your peaches and nectarines in season. You can even do plums and maybe even some apricots, and you're going to clean those. Make sure you wash those thoroughly with our Eat Cleaner Fruit and Vegetable Wash to take off any residue that you don't want to eat. And then you're going to cut those around the rib of the fruit. So if you take your finger and just run it around the ridge, you know, that little indentation that wraps around, you know, nectarines and peaches, just take your knife and run it right across that and then give that fruit a twist. It's so easy to open it up when you do it that way. You won't make a juicy mess. And then it's easy to pop the pit out. So open up your fruit, brush it with a little bit of oil. I like to use coconut oil because it brings out the nice natural sweetness in your fruit. Brush it on both sides. And then you can put it right on a piece of aluminum foil onto your grill, or if you have a grill basket, you can do that too, or just make sure your grill is nice and clean before you put it down directly on there. And give it a nice grill, just about 3 minutes on each side. You don't have to cook it for very long. And then I'll take that fruit off the grill. I'll sprinkle it with a little bit of cinnamon and just a nice toss of fresh lemon juice, and maybe a little bit of organic stevia to bring the natural sweetness out. Add that to maybe a scoop of gelato. I'm talking like a nice vanilla bean gelato and a sprinkle of low sugar granola. And you have a gorgeous dessert that you make in literally 5 to 6 minutes.
Well, Chef, we just started growing stevia, and I cannot believe how sweet those leaves are. Just small little leaves of stevia on fruit can really accentuate the sweetness. Sounds like a great recipe, easy and delicious.
And the great part about this is you don't have to make a mess in your kitchen. Nobody wants to heat up their stove when it's hot out. You can do it all outside. And the contrast of the coolness of the gelato, or, you know, maybe a non-dairy frozen treat if you don't do dairy, you can do that with the grilled fruit. And the warm spices of the cinnamon, it's just so fragrant. And that little pop of crunch with your low sugar granola, it's the bomb.
Sounds great. Well, we look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks, and we appreciate these great recipes.
Awesome. I hope everybody tries it.
Use your ears and eyes. Now you can watch Chef Maria demonstrate her recipes on Facebook Live. We're linked to it in this week's show notes. Subscribe to the GreenSense Radio podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com. Our next guest is a Renaissance man. He's an artist, poet, conservationist, and an elected official. He's pioneered solutions in green infrastructure, and he's on a mission as the Ingham County Drain Commissioner in the state of Michigan to replace pipes with plants, saving money and improving the quality of life in the community. Patrick Linneman, welcome to Green Sense.
Well, welcome to you having me here. I like it. Thank you.
Well, it's
always,
always
a pleasure to talk to you.
And you too, Patrick. You're a global leader in what you're doing, and we want to help get your story out. So in simple terms, explain green infrastructure and how you replace pipes that convey stormwater with plants.
Well, green infrastructure is, in fact, the replacing of concrete infrastructure or traditional infrastructure with more native kinds of the things that nature would normally do. Daylighting pipes, for example, using dirt as soil medium, dirt and sand and gravel as soil mediums to promote plant growth, which transevaporate the water and clean it and transform the pollution into clean water, the polluted water into clean water.
Why is this good for the environment?
Well, the Montgomery drain, which is one that's on my drawing board right now, and I'm going to be starting in October, it is 80% impervious, and it is about a 400-acre watershed. It goes right directly, dumps directly into the Red Cedar River. Annually, that watershed produces roughly 50,000 to 75,000 pounds of pollution in the water column that goes to the river. When I'm done building this, I will not only reduce the water going to the river in terms of volume, but I will reduce almost all, probably about 96 to 98% of all the pollution will no longer go there.
And how does this improve the quality of life in the community?
Well, green infrastructure. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody having a picnic around a concrete pipe, but with
that
the
says
wetlands
it all.
And ponds.
You painted a great picture.
Yeah. So the wetlands and infrastructure that I build is all user friendly. People can interact with it. In fact, the Montgomery drain, we formed a subcommittee called Art in the Wild, and we are going to use art, museum quality art, to explain environmental problems and solutions to the public. I find myself a lot of times preaching to the choir. You know, people who are environmentalists like to hear what I say, and and they're already sold on the idea, but I need to reach the vast number of people who haven't understood yet that pollution is bad for them. So we're going to use art to do that and bring them to these constructed low-impact design facilities that I'm building. The mission of that is to enhance environmental restoration through the integration of art and human imagination. And the goal is to fund, select, place, maintain in perpetuity art in areas of environmental renewal. So it's pretty cool, actually. We're going to put about $10 million worth of art in this one drain.
I think your answer said it all. You never see picnics around a concrete pipe, but adding art to the equation, that's fantastic. That really does stimulate the soul.
Yeah, we're going to have, there'll be live music every Saturday along the paths. I'm putting in this one drain, I'm putting in over 2.1 miles of hiking, biking paths in and around the wetlands. Michigan Avenue has a boulevard, for example, which is just a mounded green space with a few trees. It's going to be turned into a running, babbling brook running both east and west from the center. And we have $1.5 million piece of bronze art that's going to go on top of the fountain that shoots the water out.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Patrick Linneman, Ingham County Drain Commissioner. And we're talking about his mission to replace pipes with plants to convey and make the community more livable. So we talked about how this can improve the quality of life in the community, but properties next to green space often see an increase in value. Have you been able to quantify how your improvements have caused property values to rise?
Well, we can go even further than that. When you create a green space around a property, the property values tend to go up, yes. And we have proof of that. We have, there's been studies done by real estate agencies and a variety of universities across the country. But when you put blue in there with the green, in other words, put water next to it, it almost triples the value that people see in that piece of open space. And when we're extracting pollution, creating an environment where people can interact with the water, then rainwater no longer becomes a waste product. It becomes a resource that's valued. And it's that value that increases everyone's property around it. And there's going to be a development along this project here of over somewhere around $500 million is going to be spent by the private sector to put in a Marriott hotel, student housing. There's 250 condos and townhouses with 8 or 9 retail, brand new restaurants, entertainment centers, retail space, and a hospital surgical center, all in this drain because I'm rebuilding this drain this way. So if you say that you can't have economic development and clean the water at the same time, that's just flat out wrong. And the beauty of this kind of infrastructure is that it is cheaper, by sometimes 90% cheaper than traditional engineered designs. I can build a stream for 1/10 the cost of putting a pipe in the ground.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the economics and how you save money. Tell us why this is 90% cheaper than using pipes.
Well, pipes are expensive, and you have to go underground. It takes longer to put them in, and it takes a lot more effort to go through the conflicts underground with the gas pipes and drinking water lines and sanitary sewer lines and so on and so forth. But when you put it above ground, I just have to dig a ditch and put rocks around it and plant it with beautiful plants, indigenous plants, and make it function as a water filter. And it's visible year round. The toll gate drain, which I took you on a tour of, for example, that's just one example of many of them that I've done. That particular project, we saved over $18 million from a traditional design to handle that stormwater in that watershed. And the biggest argument that people make is that now you have to maintain it. That's true. You do. The cost of maintaining that wetland complex that handles all that water, which doesn't put any water to the river, and everything is clean. It's almost drinkable when it goes through the system. And it's beautiful. There are people there all the time. But the beauty of it is that I can maintain that for over 600 years and not spend what I saved.
That's fantastic. And as you said, it improves the quality of life and it helps either keep taxes fixed or lower your taxes. So you're recognized as an international expert, Patrick. Tell us about the project that you've got on the table right now and how it's applicable, not just to Michigan, but worldwide.
Well, if you took a city like Detroit or Philadelphia, for example, is going to spend $2 billion on redoing their stormwater infrastructure in their downtown area. The way that I've designed this system, this is a really dense urban area with a major highway going through it. It's 80% impervious. It's full of shopping centers, parking lots, and residents. And it's jam-packed with concrete, basically. You can go into any city and rebuild it and make it attractive to be there again. This is going to redefine Michigan Avenue in Lansing, Michigan. It's going to make a destination out of it. I can envision through this Art in the Wild project, which is meant to use art to teach people about the environment, is going to be a destination for a long time. Our goal is to put $10 million worth of museum quality art in and around this storm drain. I mean, nobody's ever done that before. So I think it not only is the excitement is so broad, we have artists coming out of the woodwork trying to advertise their art and want to be a part of this project. And live music and poetry and all of that kind of thing is going to be on top of stormwater infrastructure, giving people a place to live and recreate. And it's going to improve their quality of life. It's going to improve property values. I can guarantee you that the shop owners that have to suffer the brunt of the assessment to pay for all of this, they're not complaining to me. In fact, they're willingly stepping up to the table and say, let's do this. It's going to bring tens of thousands of people to their shops. It's a win-win all the way around. When we partner with nature, and you can never win a battle if you declare war on water, you have to partner with it. So that's what we're doing. We're using nature and the physics of water to actually clean it and take care of the pollution that we create in urban areas.
Well, that's why we like to tell your story. You're very passionate and you're doing great things out there. So I've got a little gift tip for you. I'm going to make you king for a day. What would you want your subjects to do? What's the first thing?
I would like them to take 15 minutes of their day and think about how they live their lives and how they can improve that living of life by simply understanding how they pollute and then just stop doing it. And that would value everyone's life would be better, I think, if we could just become more aware and more passionate about trying to save Mother Earth or Father Earth, whichever your preference is, and using this beautiful space that we live in, and not just make it a concrete jungle. And we can do that, I think, if everybody just took 15 minutes a day and just committed themselves to not to pollute that day.
Well, Patrick, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Keep up the fantastic work, and we'll keep shining a spotlight on that project so the rest of the world can help follow your lead.
Okay. I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
That's Renaissance man Patrick Lindemann, who serves as the Ingham County Drain Commissioner and is on a mission to replace pipes with plants, improving the quality of life in the community.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you.
A floating ecosystem was installed this summer in GreenSense's hometown of Chicago, in our longtime polluted but much improving Chicago River. Nick Wesley with Urban Rivers joins us now to talk more about the project. Welcome, Nick.
Hey, how are you?
Well, I recently went to the Big Fish Ball charity event that was hosted at a hotel along the Chicago Riverwalk, and it's looking great. Congratulations to all the work that you and the volunteers do to make that river look beautiful again.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start out and keep it simple. Is what does a floating ecosystem look like? So paint a picture for our audience, because I couldn't find this on the web anywhere.
Yeah, so the units that we use in the Chicago River have coconut coir wrapped around a stainless steel frame with HDPE plastic floats. So we have these units that are basically rectangles that link together. So on our installation specifically, we have about 58 of these modules linked together. And on top of them, you see plants just growing directly out of them. So we put them in and then they grow directly out. Then the roots go underneath the water, fish eat the roots, birds eat the top, and it starts to really jumpstart the ecosystem in a place like an urban river.
And for those that don't know, coconut coir is the ground up husk of a coconut, which is a renewable resource, and it hydrates and dehydrates quickly. I know all about it because we grow in coconut coir. So that's a great description. And the Chicago River is pretty large. Where is this actually located?
So our installation is on the east side of Goose Island in Chicago. So basically there's a Whole Foods, and it's along this river walk next to it.
And
we chose that location for because it's a location that's not navigable by commercial boat traffic. So it's much easier for kayaks to go through, and it creates kind of a unique space. You don't have barges moving back and forth.
This is quite small. How big is it actually?
So it's 166 feet long by about 10 feet wide, although it goes in and out at different parts.
You mentioned that it'll be attractive to kayakers and pedestrians. I understand how a kayaker could get to the structure, but how does a pedestrian get on it?
Yeah, so it's right along the Riverwalk. So if you're walking down the Riverwalk, you can look over the edge and you'll see this installation. It's also conveniently placed near Whole Foods. So if you're in the elevators or in any of their dining areas, you can kind of see it.
So you could be on the cement Riverwalk and then just hop onto the floating ecosystem?
So we don't. So you don't actually stand on it. It's basically there for plants and animals. So the Riverwalk is about, has an 8 feet drop until it hits the river. So it's along that edge. So you can look at it, but you can't really, can't walk on it.
And kayakers, they can kayak up to it?
They can kayak up to it as well, yeah. So you can go adjacent to it and kind of admire what's going on the raft.
And what kind of nature will you see if you kayak or walk along it?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, we had within about an hour and a half of putting it there, we saw a family of ducks starting to sit on one of the bird platforms we built. Some of the other things you might see are, you'll see other fish swimming underneath it. There's a couple of lagoon areas in it, which you can see, the scales underneath just a couple inches of water. You'll see other birds come up and eat some of the plants around it. So it really kind of brings right now it's a congregating center for all of the local wildlife that are in the area. And we're hoping that this attracts more wildlife.
Well, Chicagoans know a couple of things. One, you never put ketchup on a hot dog. You never want to swim in the river or eat fish from it. So give us a little recent history on the Chicago River. You know, what are the pollution levels like now? Is wildlife coming back? And has the overall quality of the river improved? And how do you measure improvements of the river and the ecosystems?
Yeah, so the river, historically has been extremely polluted. There's a lot of recent efforts that are going into cleaning it. There's been this UV ultraviolet sanitation system for some of the discharge that's going in. They're putting in this deep water tunnel project, which is basically a reservoir to store sewage instead of sending untreated sewage into the river. So there's a lot of effort being put into there. But one of the things we saw that was kind of lacking is habitat. So, around the turn of the century, all of our rivers were dredged and made into these basically channelized systems for shipping. So boats can dock on the side of any part of the river, and it makes it really convenient for people. But what that does is it degrades all of the edge ecosystem. So you don't have areas where fish and other wildlife would be able to find refuge. So what we see is these floating wetlands as being a way to clip on some habitat to the edge of the wall and provide an area for fish and other animals. So originally, people thought that the river was too dirty for a lot of plants and animals to survive. But what it's turning out is that there's a lot that can survive, but they just don't want to be there. There's just not any space for them to live. So that's where we fit in.
If you've just joined us, I'm Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Nick Wesley with Urban Rivers, and we're talking about the new floating ecosystems that they've put in the Chicago River. Nick, Chicago historically has been behind in being a good steward of its rivers. We were way behind keeping our pollution levels up to the national standards. Are we learning from others on how to be better stewards, or have we advanced now to a point where we can teach other cities on how to be good stewards of rivers?
I really hope so. I see a lot of effort in Chicago on creating viable river systems for both people and animals alike. So I see things such as the mayor's forum about rivers and other kind of more international outreach as good signs. But, obviously we can always be better. I'm really excited, though, to see how the conversation is turning. Before, we didn't have much. People saw the rivers as mostly a sewer. You look at it, you kind of ignored it. But now I think there's a lot more focus on it. So I'm really excited to see how things develop in the next 5 years or so.
a lot of the work that was done to put the floating ecosystem together was done by volunteers. Where did you learn about the process of motivating people to volunteer their time and energy to make projects like this valuable?
You know, it started for us as a volunteer project as well. As we've been at this for over 3 years, trying to raise funds and get all the necessary permits to put something like this in. And everywhere we would go and every person, a lot of the people we would talk to would ask, how can I volunteer? How can I help? So, you know, it's just something that when you tell somebody about a project like this, they want to be a part of the solution. And for us, it was fairly easy to get a lot of volunteers interested in this because it's, you know, people enjoy the river, they enjoy being out in the river, and they want to see it cleaned up. So I think it's one of those things that a lot of people want and are willing to help with if they can find an outlet.
Well, the floating ecosystem you mentioned is 160 feet long, but you've got a goal to have it reach a half mile by the year 2020. How do you plan to get there?
Yeah, so, you know, we're starting small. We're starting with this initial installation as an experiment to see what works and what doesn't work. And what we want to do is basically it's a big experiment. Every plant that we put in there is for a purpose to see if it will survive and how it will survive. And we want to take this knowledge that we learn from this installation and then apply it to a bigger installation next year and then an even bigger one in the next upcoming year. So we're going to continue doing our fundraisers. We had a Kickstarter fundraiser, which was fairly successful last year. We're going to host another one of those fairly soon. And we're going to just try to find other ways where we can create value for Chicagoans on this section and help facilitate other cities with doing similar projects. So we've been talking with some other cities about how their projects and how they could kind of increase their use these systems to increase the habitat in their waterways. And we want to keep doing that.
That's Nick Wesley with Urban Rivers. I'm Robert Colangelo with a reminder to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Help us help you. Head over to the greensensefarms.com website, click on radio show, and support our Podbean patron drive. Now more than ever, it's time to support independent media so we can continue to put on great shows that feature sustainable innovations and make the world a better place to live.
Well, next week, you know, just because a lot of politicians have been ignoring climate change, the people have not. So we'll get the latest results from a survey by Deloitte. And our aging infrastructure, well, we could be replacing it with intelligent infrastructure. So we'll find out the latest cutting edge infrastructure technology.
Well, the people are going to speak, so I want to listen. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, so you'll never miss a show. And you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. I want you to stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.